Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310. Or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.
Welcome to the award-winning legal news and review recognized from the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, featuring the law firm of Santucci Fiore Fiel, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. Located in downtown Fort Lauderdale is Mike Santucci, legal panel attorney who co-chairs the intellectual property section of the Broward Bar. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law, also syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his fields of practice. And nationally known criminal defense attorney, Gary Ostro, Esquire. Over 30 years defending the accused in both state and federal courts. With over 500 jury trials to his credit, Gary Ostro's practice focuses on Fourth Amendment issues as related to search and seizure, as well as federal civil rights cases against police officers, as well as the departments and city in which they operate. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, three Category 4 hurricanes have made U.S. landfall so far this year, Harvey, Irma, and Maria. They've all made landfall from Texas, Florida, to Puerto Rico, respectively. And while this program is being taped, there's another hurricane in the Gulf Coast going to the panhandle of Florida and South Louisiana.
Hurricane Phil.
What is going on? We're very pleased today to feature from the law firm of Vaccaro Law Firm, which is, who is Charles Vaccaro, who is board-certified civil trial law specialist and truly an expert when it comes to dealing with insurance companies for over now 32 years. And we're going to be talking about insurance bad faith. What actually does it mean? What constitutes it? And how can you protect yourself? Just because your payments are being delayed, that doesn't mean you're not going to be paid. Homeowners in Florida so far, according to the Florida Department of Insurance, have filed over 243,000 claims, with only roughly about 4% of them that's been addressed, which means about 4,000 as well. And I'd like to first welcome and introduce the legal panel host. First of all, good afternoon, Gary Singer.
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
Doing good.
Let me ask you, how'd you come up with that 4,000 number?
Well, from the property insurance group for the Florida, it's right
really?
There. Yeah, see.
Did you do that math yourself?
I'm not using fake news.
That's great, man.
Absolutely.
Nice switch.
Yep. And speak about nice switch, Gary Ostro. Good afternoon, Gary.
Speaking of switches, can I get billed first one of these days?
Yes, you will.
Thank you.
Yes, you will.
My spot.
And especially since you met Dennis Rodman.
Dennis Rodman.
Well, that wasn't
yeah.
the first time.
You had a double
yep,
date
really?
With him, right?
Well, you can't double date one guy.
Yep.
It's more like
dated
one
yourself.
And last,
so you're dating Dennis Rodman?
Last and certainly not least, filling in for Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Peori is Sal Fazio.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
Appreciate you coming in. And filling in for Mike. You got big shoes to fill, let me tell you.
No, he's only about a 9.
You know, listeners, you may want to take notes. And it's very important. You cannot, first of all, this information is information you need to know, even though you don't know when you need it, sincerely. And a very warm welcome to Chuck Vaccaro.
Thank you, Phil. Good to be here.
Welcome back. Welcome back, yeah. Well, we all survived, and rightly so. You know, Florida is the most prepared state for hurricanes, but it's also the most heavily insured state as well. First of all, I want to begin the question. As I said, we're going to talk about bad faith. What does the term insurance bad faith mean?
Well, Phil, a lot of people don't know this, but in the Florida administrative regulations, there's actually a code of ethics for insurance adjusters who have to be licensed by the state in order to adjust claims. And it's interesting. If you look at what it says, the work of adjusting insurance, the work of adjusting insurance claims engages the public trust. So you think about that right there. The state is making it a very important position that you're getting trust from people. They're giving you your claims.
Right.
The most important part of the ethics, though, goes to this, and it talks about the duty of an insurance adjuster. An adjuster shall put the duty for fair and honest treatment of the claimant above the adjuster's own interest in every instance. In other words, the adjuster's first duty and primary duty is to protect their insured who submitted the claim, not an insurance company's profits. Bad faith comes about, and when you're talking about bad faith, you've got to talk about the two different types of claims you might have in insurance. But bad faith generally comes about when the insurance company doesn't fairly and honestly adjust the claim and keep the insured's best interest in mind when they're doing so, creating some kind of damage that goes beyond the contract itself that the insured normally would not recover from the insurance company through the contract.
Right, right. Well, what are some examples of insurance bad faith? I know unreasonable delay in making payments to the policyholder is one, but my God, they're overwhelmed from Texas, Puerto Rico to, of course, Florida.
First of all, again, as I said, you got to know the difference between the two types of insurance claims that you can have.
Mm-hmm.
There's what they call a third-party insurance claim. That's a situation where a third party is going through you to get your insurance. In other words, if you have liability insurance, insurance that causes an accident and the person that you were involved in an accident with is coming after you, they go through your insurance through you. A first-party claim, which is the one we're going to focus on today, is more when you're submitting a claim to your own insurance company. In that situation, it's called first-party bad faith. And the reason why that's important is because there's no common law right to that. That's provided by statute. And the statute's Florida Statute 624155. And what that does is create a mechanism by which if you perfect your claim for bad faith by going through the statute, filing what they call a civil remedy notice, which lists, you're going to list out what the insurance company is doing wrong and how that is causing an issue to you. If the insurance company doesn't correct that behavior within 60 days and you ultimately go on and prove your breach of contract claim and you can show you have extra contractual damages that go beyond a contract, you can bring a claim for bad faith against the insurance company.
But you worked in both as a defense attorney for insurance companies and as a plaintiff attorney, correct?
That's correct.
That makes you very unique. There's only a handful of attorneys that could say that. And typically the insurance companies wouldn't want to work with somebody that also handles plaintiff on another side.
Well, I've been in a unique position, and the thing that it gives me is that in order to understand how the opponent is going to act and anticipate how they'll act, it's good to know what they do. And in this situation, I'm on both sides constantly. I see what's going on from the insurance aspect, how they're looking at claims. I understand how the plaintiffs are looking at claims. Basically, what I like to say is I can speak both languages, plaintiff and defendant, fluently, and I do it every day. A lot of insurance companies over the years have hired me to keep me from suing them.
Which is a very clever strategy. I got a question, Gary Ostro. Can you take it one step further for our listening audience when you say there may be a basis for a bad faith claim? What does that translate to in terms of damages, punitive damages, or otherwise?
Well,
how do you exploit that?
You have to, first of all, you have to make sure, in the first party situation, you have to make sure you do file your civil remedy notice and you explain your damages. A lot of the bad faith occurs when either the insurance company doesn't promptly settle your claim, and it could cause damages, such as I had a situation where a gentleman was involved in an auto accident. His car was damaged. The insurance company, or no, actually, a different situation, another gentleman where his car was stolen.
Oh, wow.
The insurance company launched a campaign trying to say he stole his own car, torched it, and tried to bring a fraud claim.
Without any supporting evidence, I assume?
Well, they had a locksmith that said that the key looked the exact same and there was no scratch marks in the keyhole.
Was this in Palm Beach County?
This was in Miami.
Okay.
And I hired actually an expert. He was a police officer who worked for the Federal Crime Bureau on Auto Theft. And this gentleman drove like a Honda that was the most common car stolen with what they used as a passkey. But anyway, what happened in that case was this gentleman, not only was his car stolen, but as a result of not having a car, he lost his job. So he lost wages. Now, the lost wages is not something that's covered by the comprehensive portion of the insurance policy, but it definitely was a damage that was caused by the insurance company taking this bad tactic.
Arguably.
Well, we won the case at trial. The insurance company lost, and we went on and proceeded with the bad faith case because we perfected it throughout. We filed our civil remedy notice. The 60 days went by. The insurance company still kept up their allegations that he stole his own car. And after trial on the underlying claim, we went after them for bad faith, and they settled it very quickly.
But you didn't need the lost wage portion of that to pursue the bad faith.
Well, the lost wages was just gravy. The lost wages was the damages.
Oh.
You need damages in order to be
How about
able
his
to,
damages to his reputation?
You could bring that. Damages to reputation, impairment to credit. There are situations such as in the hurricane right now. Some people may be making a choice of repairing their homes, paying the mortgage if their homes isn't repaired in time, or having to pay to live somewhere. That's a tough choice for a lot of people. If the insurance company doesn't repair their home timely and they run out of money to be able to pay their mortgage, to make that decision of paying their mortgage or paying to live somewhere else, they may choose to forego paying their mortgage, and their house either gets foreclosed on or foreclosure proceedings start until the insurance company finally steps in and after taking their time and pays for the damages or makes the house whole so that they can live in again and stop having to pay to actually live somewhere else.
Well, let me ask you this, Chuck. Is just do they have to turn it down, or is it just too much time about it? We were talking about statistics in the beginning. Even updating them to current, it's less than 10% of claims have been dealt with and paid out so far. How long do they have before they're acting in bad faith?
It's a reasonable time, and that's a very vague type of definition. You have to look and see what they're doing, actually, and that's where a lot of the bad faith comes up with. Either they're pursuing investigative paths that are going to lead them to dead ends. You know, they're trying to find out if there's some grounds for fraud or misrepresentation, or if they just don't have enough time to do it. And again, I do represent insurance companies. Not all adjusters are doing this. A lot of times, they're just overwhelmed. They have a lot of claims coming in. You know, you could see with the hurricane, a lot of adjusters are being brought in out of state.
Right.
And a lot of claims are getting adjusted fairly quickly. But there's other times when the insurance adjuster just has too many claims and they can't devote enough time and attention to that one claim. And you have to understand, they have a lot of claims. The person that's submitting it has only one. Oh, so man. Sometimes they need it quicker than others. And the insurance companies can't accommodate them, and it causes extra damage.
How is appropriate staffing determined? Like right now, obviously, there's hundreds of thousands of claims. You know, they can't be expected only to have, you know, the normal people under non-emergency. But then again, it's Florida. If hurricanes happen, you have to plan for that as an insurance company.
Well, I think that could be a part of it, because part of the checklist on the statute for bringing bad faith is failing to properly investigate a claim, and that would be part of it.
Oh,
you have to have enough... failing to promptly adjust a claim.
Now, by way of following up, you were saying that, you know, as your example, you know, someone maybe isn't getting a payment, so they can't pay their mortgage. If they don't have any money, how can they afford to pay their attorney?
In a lot of these insurance cases, attorneys like me take it on what's called a pure contingency contract.
Okay.
In other words, we do not take a percentage of what the insured would get if they have to sue their insurance company in a breach of contract action or the second, the bad faith action. What happens is we get a statutorily awarded fee. In Florida, which is unique to the state, because I also have a license to practice in Texas as well, and Texas doesn't have a similar statute. Florida has Florida Statute 627-428, which allows for attorney's fees to be awarded to the insured who prevails against their insurance company. And so that creates a situation whereby if you get an attorney and they take it on a pure contingency fee like I do, they don't take a percentage. The insured will get their money. If they need $10,000 to fix their house and you prevail against the insurance company, they're going to get that $10,000. You're not taking a percentage of that. Not only that, the insurance company then has to pay your attorney's fees on top of that.
A little bit of a technical inside baseball, but question for our lawyer listeners, do you get risk multipliers?
It depends. Yes, you do. You can, depending on the case, but the risk multiplier standard is, it has to be, I think the main standard is that there's no way to find competent counsel absent
difficulty, the
awarding of a contingency multiplier. And I've been to a number of fee hearings where that was trying to be proved by bringing in other attorneys who said I would have rejected that case. And You know, but yes, there is a contingency fee multiplier that can be applicable, not anymore for personal injury protection because statutorily that was taken out
by statute. But
for any other type of insurance, you can get contingency fee multipliers, and you can get it for the bad faith claim.
Does it usually happen, or is it more of an exception?
I think it's an exception. I think it's an exception that you get the multiplier. You know, I used to have a saying that you could probably, with certain types of claims, you could walk outside the courthouse or rock down the street and hit 10 attorneys that would be willing to take the case. And if that's the case, then the first and most important branch of a contingency fee multiplier is not there.
Gotcha. Now, what about if you settle? Do you still get paid by the insurance company?
That's a good question.
Yes.
Well, that's why I make the big bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have a case pending against the insurance company and they decide that's it and they're going to pay, they can't not get out of paying attorney's fees under the Woolard versus Lloyd's case from the Florida Supreme Court.
So they can't work around you.
Right. There's a notion called confession of judgment. So if the insurance company decides that they're going to throw in the towel, that they know that they're going to lose and they want to just stop it right there, and they say, we're going to pay your client's claim, and it's acceptable to the client, of course, they have to pay your attorney's fees. Yes.
Charles, let me just jump in.
When you're done, sorry. I got one after.
Okay.
So
I'll never be done. So.
Wow.
But along those same lines, it would seem to me, earlier in my career, I sued Travelers for not covering my dad's medical because they said it was voodoo and not covered by the policy, which the judge ruled that it doesn't have to be AMA approved. And I settled it. I was young and dumb, but I didn't know. We settled it for a number that may or may not have included the fees. It's kind of academic, if you know what I mean. We negotiated a settlement that may or may not have included them paying the fees. Does it matter if you negotiate a number that whether it mentions fees or not that the client accepts? Because you said that they have to pay your fees if they throw in the towel, meaning settle. Is that what you meant, settle?
Well, I'm talking about if they realize that they're going to be on the hook for the claim and they want to get rid of it, they can't take your fees away. They can't take the fees away from you by paying the claim.
But you're not talking about a settlement.
You could settle, and let's say you have a case that's going south, and you know your client maybe they over exaggerated or there's some things that are going on that are starting to look like you may not be able to win this case. But the insurance company, you know, they're worried too. Again, being on the other side, I see this. They're worried too because you know, anytime you get an insurance company versus a person in front of a jury, you know, there's a couple strikes already against the insurance company. You got to really work hard to get them on your side.
So that's the exception where you can settle. They kind of cop to it, but they're not paying your fees necessarily.
Well, you engage in what's called a global settlement, but but if you do that, you got to be really careful. You got to make sure what is going the client's going to get and because the main thing here is not getting your fees, it's representing your client. I mean, I try not to negotiate fees until after my client's paid in full. If there are those rare situations that you get involved with where the case looks like it's not as good as you thought it was when you first filed it, and you got to explain it to your client and make sure that they understand they have to take a limited amount or get them their full amount, and you just take a hit on the fees. The good thing about the fee provision is that it's an effective club for leverage. If you have a case, I mean, there's a lot of times when the fees itself can outweigh the claim or far exceed the claim. And so you can use that. If you do it correctly, you could use the fees as you can't split fees with a non-client, but you could certainly use the fact that the insurance company could be exposing themselves to a large amount of fees as leverage to get your client the money that they're looking for, and then you just, you know, you take the hit yourself on reducing your fees and let your client get their full recovery.
We only really have 6 minutes left, and an important issue you brought to my attention was regarding Citizens. You educated me, and I got to tell you, I was like, wow. Why don't you educate our audience what Citizens is and why you can't go after them for bad faith?
Well, Citizens, actually, contrary to everybody's knowledge, I think, is not an insurance company. They're a government-created entity that arose or was formerly known as the Florida Joint Property and Casualty Underwriting Association. And basically, it was the government recognized the need for everybody to be able to have property insurance, that it was important. So they created a fund of other insurance companies. And back in the old days, other insurance companies like the big ones, State Farm, Allstate, and even the smaller ones, depending on what types of policies they wrote, would actually service the policies. They would provide the claims and underwriting management to handle the claims and write the policies. Now the government turned that all into Citizens. Citizens is a government entity. It's not an insurance company, and they are immune from bad faith claims. So that creates a situation whereby, you know, you can have people waiting forever for claims and not having them properly adjusted. And, you know, and I'm not saying anything against Citizens. I think that they have a lot more insureds than a lot of other companies do, and they have to deal with a lot of these claims. And especially the type, you know, these are claims that where people ordinarily cannot get insurance. So there's usually some issues with a lot of them as it is.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. But,
Charles.
Oh. But they don't let you know that Citizens is not like an Allstate. I just found that interesting because until I met you, that's exactly what I thought Citizens was.
They'll read the paperwork.
I'm telling you.
It's right there.
Sal?
Charles, this is Alfazio. I have a quick question. What if a person is given a really low offer after they make a claim with their insurance company? What their next steps procedurally?
Yeah.
Well, their next step, at that point in time, if the claim has already been submitted and the person is not getting a response, it depends. And a lot of times the insurance company is going to be cryptic as to why they're giving a low offer. There might be situations also, too, besides the low offer, they're wanting to set a statement of somebody. They're asking questions that don't appear to be like, you know, associated with the claim. Things like that. That's the time that I think a person should start looking to an attorney that does this kind of work, because if the insurance company is making a low offer, they usually think they have a reason for doing it. If they start trying to set you for an EUO or asking these other questions that don't appear related to the claim, they're up to something that you may need to have an attorney help you at that point in time, because usually, you know, that's they try to get you to say it before you're represented, and once you say it, it's hard to take that back.
And does that relate back to the adjuster's duty to properly adjust the claim? Could you make that argument?
Absolutely, because they're supposed to tell you why they're not paying a claim correctly, what your coverages are, and what the potential issues are, but a lot of times that doesn't happen.
Hey, Chuck, at what point does one of our listeners get an attorney involved in this process? When do they know they need an attorney?
Well, I think that's when either they deny the claim, when they get make a request for an EUO.
What's an EUO?
An examination under oath. I'm sorry, sworn statement. They want to take your statement under oath so that they want you to say certain things under oath so that if they have some information showing that that's not true, then they could say you fraudulently swore.
Yeah, one of the things that always amazes me is that people somehow, because they're smart, you know, think that they're going to outsmart someone who is or going to know all the little tricks of someone who does this all day, every day. The reality is, no matter how bright you are, if it's not what you do, you have a good chance of messing it up.
Yeah, that's true with pretty much everything.
So, and how would they get a hold of you?
Well, they can contact our office. Our phone number is 954-734-2320, 954-734-2320. They can visit our website, which is vaquerolawfirm.com, and they should have links there to the phone numbers and also our email address is on there.
Quote.
What is your email address?
My email address is CLV, as in Charles L. Vaquero, ESQ as in Esquire, at comcast.net.
Now, this segment will be on your new website. I should let our audience know it's being updated as we're speaking.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we got about a minute left. I actually had a question. I heard like a little, it's a little off the subject, but still insurance, where someone has a smaller policy, and instead of defending that person in court, they tender. What's that all about? They tender the policy instead of, it's not really homeowners insurance.
That's more of a third party.
In general. Yeah.
That's a third party situation where if somebody has a minimal limits insurance policy for liability purposes, like a 10-20 minimal limits insurance for auto, and somebody gets in an accident and it's grievous accident, the damages are going to be in excess of $10,000. The insurance company will tender the $10,000, say this is all that's under the policy.
Have a nice life.
Well, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
That could be a problem, because if you tender, there's two duties in that situation, in a third-party situation. There's a duty to indemnify and a duty to defend. And if they leave the insured undefended by just tendering the $10,000, there's possibility that could rise to bad faith. There is law out there that says once you tender limits, your job is over. But there are certain circumstances where it's probably wise to defend them anyway, even if your limits are. And I counsel my insurance company, and we do it. We continue to defend.
That's good you do that. You know, we're going to we're out of time.
Before we go out of time, just real quick, because this is important. If you're having difficulties with your insurance company, he's very approachable. You don't charge a consultation fee.
No.
Again, what is the best way to contact you? And then, Gary, you can take us out.
All right.
Yeah, no, my you can call the office at 954-734-2320. 954-734-2320.
Better.
Going too fast?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And or our website at vaccarolawfirm.com, which should have our numbers and email addresses.
And I Googled you, Charles Vaccaro. You come right up. That's V-A-C-C-A-R-O.
And we're going to have you back on talk more about this automobile stuff real soon. I want to thank you and thank our guest,
Sal Fazio, of course.
So I was actually going to say you give you a chance to plug your music, but
So
you play out with what's people don't know. Sal is quite an accomplished musician and plays out with Rolled Whiskey, right? With Santucci, very good stuff. And Gary Ostro, and of course Phil Bell, and most importantly our listeners. Be safe, folks, and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.